Can you see where it says, more precious than rubies, the wisdom of God? If you can, then we're in business here. So this is our topic this morning, and it'll be the start of a series of teachings on the wisdom of God. So let's get into this together. What we're going to cover this morning is, what is wisdom? Okay. What are the sources of wisdom? What is the value of God's wisdom? And who was the wisest man ever? Okay. Wisdom, what is it? Proverbs 15, verse 2. Let's go there, please. This gives one of the definitions of wisdom. There's more than one, but this gives what the main one is. So if you go to the book of Proverbs, chapter 15, and verse 2, it says, the tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools poureth out foolishness. So the tongue of the wise uses knowledge aright. And a good definition of wisdom is that wisdom is the right application of knowledge, uses knowledge aright in the right way. So you have to start with some knowledge, and then wisdom is what to do with it, how to apply it. The first place in the Bible where it uses the word wisdom is in Exodus chapter 28. So let's go there. In Exodus 28, what's going on is God had given the Ten Commandments verbally to Moses and the people of Israel. And then Moses spent some time up on the mountain with God. 40 days and 40 nights he was up there. And during this time, God gave him instructions regarding the tabernacle, how it would be built and constructed, and the altar where they would make the sacrifices, the altar of incense, and then the garments that Aaron, the high priest, would wear. So he told Moses what all this would look like and described it to him in words. And he said in verse 3 of 28, book of Exodus, he said, and thou shalt speak unto all that are wise hearted, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom. And this is the first place in the Bible that wisdom as a noun is used. Whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister unto me in the priest's office. So what Aaron was supposed to wear as the high priest, he didn't just open up a catalog and say, oh, I like that one. God had a design for this. God told them exactly what it would look like, and that he would put wisdom in certain individuals to make these things. And there's a guy named Bezaleel, and there was another fellow that helped him, but specifically God filled them with the spirit of wisdom, and God showed them how to do it. So one of the definitions of wisdom is to know how to do or to make something. And it could be like a physical thing, how to do or make something physical, but it also can be how to make a decision. Okay, how to make a proper judgment, how to walk with God, how to minister to somebody, how to do anything takes wisdom. It takes some know-how. And God is able to let people know how to do things, step by step, what to do. Now let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 8. That's the book that's right after Proverbs. So if you go to, and it was written by Solomon, who also wrote most of the book of Proverbs. So Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 5 says, "Whoso keepeth the commandment shall feel no evil thing. And a wise man's heart discerneth both time and judgment." This is very important. A wise man's heart discerneth both time and judgment. Because to every purpose there is time and judgment. Therefore, the misery of man is great upon him, for he knoweth not that which shall be. For who can tell him when it shall be? So part of wisdom is to know not only what to do, but when to do it. The timing of things is so very important. And you see God instructing people to do things at a certain time. You know? And that's part of wisdom. So it's the right application of knowledge. It's knowing what to do, how to do it, and when to do it. Okay? Now let's look at sources of wisdom. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. I recommend reading all of, you know, 1 Corinthians 1 and 2 and the whole book. But in half of the second half of chapter 1 and all of verse 2, it talks about the difference between God's wisdom and the wisdom of this world. So I want to read just a few verses starting in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 4, where it says, "And my speech," and this is the Apostle Paul writing to the people of Corinth, where he had been for like a year and a half. He said, "And my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom." It means words that sound good, words that seem to make a lot of sense, words that are very persuasive. But they were not enticing words of man's wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith, your believing, should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. Howbeit we speak wisdom among them that are perfect, or that are mature, that are able to receive it, yet not the wisdom of this world, nor of the princes of this world that come to naught. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world unto our glory. So there's a big contrast here between the wisdom of men, the enticing words of men's wisdom, and the wisdom of God. Let's go to James chapter 3. It gives a great contrast there as well. So James chapter 3 in verse 13, this little section starts with a question. And he asked, "Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you?" So within that group of believers that he was writing to, there were certain among them that were reputed or had a reputation of being wise men and really smart. Usually the smartest guy in the room. So who is a wise man endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation, and that's the word conversation in the King James means manner of life, the way you conduct yourself. Let him show out of a good lifestyle his works with meekness of wisdom. Meekness is very important when it comes to wisdom, because it allows you to receive. Verse 14 says, but if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. So if there were a competition among the people as far as who is the wisest among us, and everyone trying to prove that they're wiser than somebody else, all you have is a group of bitter wise guys. So if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, don't boast, and don't lie against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. Okay? It's not a good source. It's earthly, sensual, and devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion in every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. It's the real thing, and it comes from God. Okay? Those are great qualities of wisdom. It's pure. It's peaceable. It's gentle and easy to be entreated. It's full of mercy. It's helpful and does things for people. And it's without partiality. Doesn't play favorites, and without hypocrisy. It's not pretentious. It's not hidden behind a false appearance. So, which source of wisdom will you choose? You think it'd be obvious that everyone would choose the wisdom of God, but not everybody does. Some people would rather figure it out for themselves. Some people would rather look around and say, okay, that person seems to be doing well. I'll pick his brain and find out what he's doing. And I'll do that. And some people don't want to ask God for wisdom because they're not interested in doing the will of God. They have their own will. They want to know how to make their own way in the world. They want to learn how to promote themselves and do well for themselves, but they're not interested in what God wants. Let's go to Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55 in verse 8, and this is God speaking. And he says to all of us, every human being, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, and that's very high, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts than your thoughts. There's a huge difference. It's not even close. It's not that God's ways are a little bit better. It's like they're way better. Go to Proverbs chapter 3. It's a great chapter, and we'll spend a little more time there, but I just want to read a few verses here for right now. In Proverbs 3, in this little section, it contrasts, you know, checking in with God and seeing what his wisdom is and doing it your own way, your own understanding. And this is written to people that are believing in him. Okay, so let's see what it says. It says, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, all of it, and lean not unto thine own understanding. You might have an understanding of things. You might have a pretty good handle on life. But it says, don't lean to that. Don't lean to what you've figured out on your own up to this point. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. And don't ever think that you know it all. Because the person defines one that thinks that he knows it all as a fool. Because a fool will not learn. He doesn't want to learn how to be right. He just wants everyone to think that he is right and be right in his own mind. So don't be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. And that word fear in this context, when it talks about fearing the Lord, means to have an awesome respect for God, where you honor him above all others. That he's bigger in your mind than anything else. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. Anything outside of the will of God is evil, even if it seems good. It, to fear the Lord and depart from evil, and to acknowledge God in all your ways, it shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. So the wisdom of God has a positive physical effect on you when you go to God to ask what to do and then actually do it. So, and that only comes with the wisdom of God. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 19. And just two verses here, verses 20 and 21. Proverbs 19:20 says, hear counsel, you do it with your ears, and receive instruction. You also do that with your ears, that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. You don't have to start out being wise, okay? God's not going to criticize you or berate you for not already being wise. He appreciates those that realize that they don't already know what to do. So hear counsel, receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. There are many devices in a man's heart. And that's not talking about defibrillators and pacemakers. It means there are many things in a man's heart that people devise, that they come up with. Schemes, plans, you know, things that they have thought of, things that they have figured out. Many devices in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand. So not everything that you figure out, not everything that you devise from your own logic and or from your own experience or from seeing what somebody else does, they don't stand necessarily. But the counsel of the Lord always stands, even if it doesn't seem like it's the right thing to do, even if it doesn't seem like it's going well, it does stand. In the end, it is the thing to do. And skip ahead another couple of chapters to chapter 21, verse 30. When it comes to the choice of the wisdom of this world or the wisdom of God, good thing to know and understand that there is no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. So if there seems like there is, it's not real wisdom. It's just a bad idea, disguised as a good idea, perhaps. But there's no wisdom, nor understanding, nor counsel against the Lord. You know, that shall stand. People may try stuff, but it's not going to work. So, but the choice is always yours, not only for your whole life, but day by day, moment by moment, which source of wisdom will you choose? Will you acknowledge God in all your ways, or will you lean to your own understanding? You always have that choice. So the wisdom of God, what is it worth? Let's go back to chapter 3 of Proverbs. in verse 13. Do you want to be happy? It says, happy is the man that findeth wisdom and the man that getteth understanding. So happiness doesn't come to those who seek happiness. Happiness comes to those who seek wisdom, the wisdom of God. Happiness is a byproduct. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom. And you don't just stumble across it. You're going to find wisdom when you look for it. And the man that getteth understanding. For the merchandise of it, that's what you can buy with it, what you can get with it. The merchandise of wisdom is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. Fine gold. What's gold worth? You know, I looked up the spot price of gold. It's currently $1,881 per ounce. In the Bible, it talks about a talent of gold. A talent of gold at this price per ounce, the talent is about 80 pounds of gold. That is worth $2,400,000, one talent of gold. It said that in preparing for the temple to be built, David, of his own personal wealth, contributed 3,000 talents of gold. 3,000 talents. Let me do the math on that. 3,000 times 2.4 million. That's $7,200,000,000 worth of gold that went into the construction of the temple. There was a lot of gold that was used there. You can buy gold. The best gold is called fine gold. That's 99.9%, you know, fine gold. That means it's pretty much all pure gold. And you can buy it in ounces or 10 ounce bars or a kilo. A kilo is a little over 2.2 pounds. And you can go online. You could purchase this 1 kilo bar of gold for $62,277.22 with free shipping. Okay. But you could buy a lot with that, but the merchandise of wisdom is better than the merchandise of silver and the gain thereof than fine gold, like that. She's more precious than rubies. What are rubies worth? Well, I looked online to see what was the most valuable ruby to date, and there's one that's called the Jubilee Ruby, and it was sold at Christie's in New York in 2016 for $14,160,000 at auction. It's 15.99 carats, so close to 16 carats, makes a nice ring. But you know, over $14 million for one ruby. And that's the most expensive one. There, you know, you can get ruby jewelry for, you know, a few thousand dollars for a tiny little one. But they're very valuable. And in Solomon's day, when this was written, they were very valuable. But wisdom is more precious than rubies. And all the things thou canst desire are not to be compared unto her. And I bet you can desire or ask for a lot of good things. But wisdom is better than anything else that you could desire, want, or ask for. Look what comes with the package. Verse 16, length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand, riches and honor. How many people spend all their life trying to prolong their life upon the earth? And that's just in the right hand of wisdom. How many people are always seeking how they can increase their wealth, their physical, you know, financial wealth? And how many people are really trying to get people to honor them, to be recognized as an honorable person? That just comes with wisdom. Without even trying to get these things, wisdom, when you have it, it gives you long life, it gives you wealth, it gives you honor. Because that comes from God. The true health comes from God. True wealth comes from God. True honor comes from God. Verse 17 says of wisdom that her, referring to wisdom, her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. That means you don't have to put yourself through misery in order to get these things. You just seek wisdom and receive it from God, and your ways are ways of pleasantness, and all your paths are peace. And that word peace includes prosperity, safety, security, happiness. Now, it says in a number of places that wisdom is more precious than rubies. It says so in Proverbs 8, I believe, in Proverbs 16. It says so in Job chapter 28, where before the word of God was written down, Job said, where in the world do you go to find wisdom? You know, we know where to go to dig gold and iron and brass out of the ground. There are places in the world that you can go to get these things, but where do you go to get wisdom? It's, you know, it doesn't come out of the earth. It comes from the God who made the earth. Now, there's one other thing in the Bible that says that's more valuable than rubies, and that's in Proverbs 31, where it talks about the virtuous woman. And that's a whole wonderful section of God's word. I'm not going to take the time to read the whole thing this morning. But in verse 10, it opens up that section by saying, who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. That's how I think about my lovely wife. That's such great value. Far above rubies. And it talks in that section about what a virtuous woman does, how she conducts herself, how she cares for her husband, how she cares for her children, for her family, how she lives her life. And down in verse 26, there's a key verse in the middle of the section that says, she openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. So she's a virtuous woman because she has the wisdom of God in her, and it comes out of her when she opens her mouth. That's why her price is far above rubies. Without that wisdom of God, you know, none of those things would be true concerning a given person, male or female, but a person with great wisdom that they've received from God and that they live by, then that individual is worth far more than rubies. So who is the wisest man that ever lived? Number of candidates. There was in the book of Genesis, it talks about Joseph, who was sold by his brothers into slavery, and he wound up in Egypt working for a man named Potiphar. And Potiphar realized that he was a wise man, and he made him the overseer of his whole house, the steward of his estate. And then he was falsely accused of trying to sleep with Potiphar's wife. and wound up in prison. And then he had the opportunity to interpret dreams for the king's, you know, Pharaoh, the king's butler and the king's baker. And a couple of years after that happened, Pharaoh had a dream that he could not understand. And he asked all his wise men of Egypt, what the dream meant, and they couldn't figure it out. But it was the butler that said, I remember there's a guy who interpreted a dream for me once, and what he said came to pass. Pharaoh said, go get him. So they brought Joseph in front of him, and he was able to tell Pharaoh exactly what the dream meant and what actions to take in light of the information that God had given him through this dream. And Pharaoh recognized that this man, Joseph, was the wisest man that he could find, and he put him in charge of the whole kingdom. Another one is Daniel. You know, again, there was a time where King Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and he forgot the dream and wanted to know what it was and what it meant. And he asked all his wise men, and they couldn't figure it out. And they said, no, you tell us the dream and we'll figure it out for you. But he said, I've forgotten the dream. I want you to tell me what the dream was and then what it means. And they said, well, it's impossible. So he was going to have all the wise men put to death. But Daniel, who is, you know, a captive from the kingdom of Judah, and his three friends, they prayed that God would reveal the secret to him, and God did. So he went before Nebuchadnezzar and said, I can tell you what the dream was and what it means, because there's a God in heaven who reveals secrets. And he told him, and the king recognized, yeah, that was the dream, and he told him the interpretation of it. And the king Nebuchadnezzar promoted Daniel to be in charge of his whole empire. So those are good candidates. But then there's Solomon. And Solomon is reputed to be the wisest man that ever lived. But let's go to 2 Chronicles and read a little bit about Solomon. Chapter 1 and verse 7. And this is also recorded in 1 Kings chapter 3. There's a parallel record talking about the same incident. And Solomon was in the city of Gibeon, and he was sacrificing unto the Lord, and God appeared unto him in a dream at night. And we'll pick this up in verse 7, 2 Chronicles chapter 1, verse 7. Says, in that night did God appear unto Solomon and said unto him, ask what I shall give thee. And Solomon said unto God, thou hast showed great mercy unto David my father, and hast made me to reign in his stead. Now, O Lord God, let thy promise unto David my father be established, for thou hast made me king over a people like the dust of the earth in multitude. Give me now wisdom and knowledge, that I may go out and come in before this people. The phrase go out and come in is it's a figure of speech that means to be a leader, to know how to rule before people, to go out and speak to them and how to make decisions for them. So give me now wisdom and knowledge, that I may go out and come in before this people. For who can judge this people, which is so great? So he asked for wisdom, and the wisdom is so he could do a good job of ruling over God's people. He recognized that they were God's people, not just his people, but God's people, and that he needed wisdom from God to do the job that he had been called upon to do. In verse 11, God said to Solomon, because this was in thine heart, and thou hast not asked riches, wealth, or honor, nor the life of thine enemies, neither yet hast asked long life, but hast asked wisdom and knowledge for thyself, that thou mayest judge my people over whom I have made thee king, said, had a good reason for asking for this. Mm-hmm. As a result, verse 12, wisdom and knowledge is granted unto thee. I'm giving it to you. And not only will I give you that which you ask for, I will give thee riches and wealth and honor such as none of the kings have had that have been before thee, neither shall there any after thee have the like. So that was a pretty good conversation that Solomon had with God. And when he had the opportunity to ask whatever, he asked for the right thing. So he would have learned that from David, his father, who was a man after God's own heart, that wisdom is the thing to go after. Wisdom is the most valuable thing that you can have. And when he had the opportunity, he asked that, and God gave him that which was most valuable, and he gave him the other things that go along with it. He didn't have to plot and scheme how to become wealthy. He didn't have to plot and scheme how to get people to think he's great, to honor him. He didn't have to try to figure out how to extend his lifespan. God showed him all these things because that comes with wisdom. God cares about these things for a person. And God just gave him those things along with wisdom. If you go to chapter 9 of 2 Chronicles, it says that King Solomon passed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom, so that there were many kings around that had their kingdoms. And Solomon passed all the kings of the earth in riches, so he was the wealthiest king of all the kings, and in wisdom, he was the wisest one among them. And the next verse says, and all the kings of the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom that God has put, that God had put in his heart. So all the kings recognized that Solomon was the wisest king of all, the wisest man on the face of the earth. And they would travel to visit Solomon to spend time with him and learn from him. It said, if you go in First Kings and read about it, it says that Solomon gave talks about nature, you know, about trees and animals and birds and things. He told people things that he learned from God about all this. And people would ask for his advice, and they would ask him hard questions, and he would answer them. And so he was the wisest and wealthiest man in the world for a time. One of the people that came to visit him was the Queen of Sheba. And that Sheba was like in the area of Ethiopia in Africa. And she heard about the wisdom of Solomon. If you look in chapter 9, verse 3. When the Queen of Sheba had seen the wisdom of Solomon, well, first she heard about it, how wise this man was, and he had a great reputation, and she came to visit him. So she traveled from Ethiopia up to Jerusalem and spent some time with him. So after she'd spent a little time and had seen the wisdom of Solomon firsthand, and the house that he had built, and the meat of his table, and the sitting of his servants, and the attendance of his ministers, and their apparel, his cupbearers also, and their apparel, and his ascent by which he went up into the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. And that's a figure of speech, meaning it took her breath away. She was just blown away at all the details, all the way that he did things, you know, what he did, how he did it, when he did it, the right application of knowledge. And she said to the king, it was a true report, which I heard in mine own land of thine acts and of thy wisdom. Howbeit, I believed not their words until I came and mine eyes had seen it. So she said, I don't believe anybody can be that wise, that great. So she wanted to see it for herself. And when she did, she said, you know, I didn't believe it until I'd seen it. And behold, the one half of the greatness of thy wisdom was not told me, for thou exceedest the fame that I heard. Said, everyone thinks you're great, and everybody said, but now I've seen it myself. They don't know the half of it. This is just amazing. And she said, happy are thy men. So not only happy are you, but happy are thy men, and happy are thy servants, which stand continually before thee and hear thy wisdom. Said, what a great thing it would be just to be one of your servants and get to hear you talk. Why? Because he's speaking words of God. Blessed be the Lord thy God, which delighted in thee to set thee on his throne to be king for the Lord thy God, because thy God loved Israel to establish them forever. Therefore made he king over them to do judgment and justice. What a great testimony. What a great thing to say about God, because here's a man who's receiving wisdom from God and living by that wisdom, and it's on display for all to see. And then that was just one person's reaction to seeing it. Now, I wish there was a better end to the story of Solomon's life, but there's something bad that happened. Unfortunately, he says he married, 700 wives? And a lot of them were from other countries. You know, they would intermarry many times with other kingdoms for matters of diplomacy, to cement alliances between kingdoms. But in this case, it turned out badly for him. In 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 4, and it said, for it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods. This just breaks my heart to read it. And his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. Now, David made some mistakes, but he always loved God. He never worshiped any other God than the true God. Verse 5 says, for Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and went not fully after the Lord as David his father. Skip down to verse 9, it says, and the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice. That one time in Gibeon, and then after Solomon dedicated the temple and prayed to God that his ears would be open to the prayers made in that place, God appeared to him again. And he said, I will have my ears open to this place. But he also told him at that time, he said, you know, I'm going to honor this place that you have built as long as the people are faithful to me. Says, if they worship other gods, this place, as beautiful as it is, will be destroyed. And he had told Solomon that I'm going to, you know, extend your life and bless you and give you all this wisdom as long as you're faithful to me. But, you know, towards the end of his life, he didn't heed that. So you can't say Solomon was the wisest man ever. But go to Matthew chapter 12. Jesus Christ is speaking. And Jesus Christ was, of course, the Son of God doing the will of God, not everybody responded to him in the best way. Not everybody recognized who he was and what he was doing. And he made a statement to the people there in Matthew 12:42, he said, "The queen of the south shall rise up in the judgment with this generation and shall condemn it. For she came from the uttermost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon." Who's he talking about? The queen of Sheba. Remember her? His breath was taken away. "She came from the uttermost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and behold, a greater than Solomon is here." Jesus Christ, right in front of them. And yet many didn't recognize it. But he said, you know, the Queen of Sheba recognized the greatness of Solomon. And you have one that's greater than Solomon right here. Look at Isaiah chapter 11. This was written about Jesus Christ many, many years before he was born. Isaiah chapter 11, verse 1. of Isaiah says, "And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse." Jesse was the father of David, the king, the father of Solomon. And Jesus Christ was a descendant through Jesse, David, Solomon, down through Mary. "There came forth a rod," or "there shall come forth," because this is written hundreds of years before he was born, "there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots." It's like you have a stump of a tree that's been cut down, and you'll have a shoot that grows out from the roots. We have one at the corner of our house, and every couple of years we have to cut it back again because it keeps growing out of the roots. But it's talking about one who will grow out of the roots of the stem of Jesse, and that's Jesus Christ. Verse 2 says, "And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom." See that? The Spirit of wisdom is going to, from the Lord, is going to rest upon him. Wisdom and understanding. The Spirit of counsel, God's counsel, and might. The Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord, that awesome reverence for God. "And shall make him of quick understanding in the fear of the Lord. And he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, nor reprove after the hearing of his ears." It's not going to go by his five senses when he makes judgment. "But with righteousness shall he judge the poor, and reprove with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth." That's the word of God. "And with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked." That's coming after the gathering together. We'll see that. "And righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins." Faithfulness, righteousness, and faithfulness. Wisdom, understanding, judgment. And that's talking about Jesus Christ, who said of himself in John chapter 5, verse 30. Let's go there. In John chapter 5, verse 30, this is one of the conversations that Jesus Christ was having with the Pharisees that were criticizing him, that were accusing him of not obeying the law of God because he healed a lame man on the Sabbath day and told him to pick up his bed or his mat and carry it home. They accused him of being a lawbreaker. Again, the Son of God was right there in front of them, and they didn't get it. They didn't see it. They didn't understand that the greater than Solomon was right there. The one that Isaiah was talking about, was walking on the earth. And in John chapter 5, he's talking about the authority and responsibility that God, his Father, had given him, and that Jesus Christ would be the one to execute judgment upon all other men at the resurrection of the just and of the unjust. And he made this statement about himself. He said, I can of mine own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge. And that would be not the hearing with his ears, but the hearing from God. Because remember, he would not judge with the after the sight of his eyes or reprove after the hearing of his ears, but he would hear from God his Father. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just. Why? Because I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which hath sent me. That is wisdom, to seek the will of God and to do the will of God. One who seeks God's will and is willing to do it, God will talk to that person. God will instruct him. God will help him, teach him, guide him. Jesus Christ was and is the wisest man ever. So to wrap up, what is wisdom? It's the right application of knowledge. It's what to do, how to do it, and when to do it. The sources of wisdom, there's this, the wisdom of this world that a person can gain by experience, by learning, by watching other people, by figuring things out, trial and error, you know. Or there's the wisdom of God, where you let God tell you what to do. The value of wisdom, more precious than rubies, than fine gold, or anything that you can desire. The wisest man ever, Jesus Christ, who always sought the will of God and always did the will of God, his Father. Now, next time we get together, we'll continue on with this study and learn some keys to receiving God's wisdom.